and it might be mixed with bureaucracy, and that has become more important than the safety and the rights of our citizens. You know, you can't receive those type of federal funds to build your force and to create new departments unless you have a need to receive that. And that's what Congress is talking about right now with the, I think it's 1331 or something like that, one of the bills where they're trying to get the police forces to pay back any federal funds that they received for military weapons. But I think that they needed to show that there was a cause for them to receive those type of benefits here over the last 25 years. And we were the cause. You know, black people were the imminent danger. And so that relationship has played out.
Wow. And of course, we've also heard about the indictment late last week of Denoris Laren McClendon, who was shot by police several weeks ago after holding what turned out to be a replica gun on I-84. He had a history with the Portland police and was actually tased himself when he was 15. Do you know anything about this case or about people who have had past histories with Portland police then falling into a situation of his mother said that he was suffering from depression and was suicidal?
Absolutely. And of course, I mean, the story, when we talk about the people that have had mental health crisis run-ins with the police, whether they've been shot and injured or shot and killed, if you look at the chronological order of those events, they've had run-ins with the police. They've been identified as somebody that was unstable or had a mental or emotional incapacity. And so it would be, you know, it's curious to me that you can recognize who the gang members are. But when you have continuous run-ins with people that are mentally disabled, that you don't recognize them when you're getting a call for action to keep them or the community safe. And so I think that they need to step up their communications as it pertains to those type of incidents so that they're not continuously shooting people that are having a health crisis.
And in
I'm
this,
I'm thinking the same way that they set up these gang task force, they need to set up some type of task force so that they can recognize, because, I mean, the historical data doesn't lie.
And Charlie Hales campaigned saying that he would be holding police accountable once he became mayor. Now we see that he has been part of agreeing to pay back Portland Police Captain Mark Krueger and erasing disciplinary actions on his record. Mark Krueger being the Portland police officer who set up a memorial to Nazi, German Nazi soldiers in a camp in a park in Portland. What do you think about Charlie Hales and his record on this?
I disagree wholeheartedly because of what Mr. Krueger did, and I don't think that that's fair for Charlie to make that type of opportunity available to him. I think he was elected by the majority of the people because we thought that we were bringing in a fair partner to the community. We thought that our city council wasn't reflective of our community, and we brought Charlie in from the outside of the political networks thinking that we were going to get something different. And so that was an unfair assumption on our behalf because of our, you know, our outcome with this. And so I don't agree with it. I think that it's malicious in its intent, and it just says to taxpayers and community members that your equity is not that important to us. I can understand going to the program that he went to. That cost us money to send him there, and then this decision is still being held. So,
you mean the training, the diversity training?
Yeah, diversity training. I think if he really learned something from that training, that he wouldn't have continued with that decision.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Again, I've been speaking with Teresa Rayford. She's with Don't Shoot Portland. You can find them on Facebook if you look up Don't Shoot Portland, Don't Shoot PDX on Twitter, and every Saturday at Dawson Park from 1 to 4, you can meet up with Don't Shoot Portland. Thank you so much, Teresa, for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, and keep up the good fight.
And you as well. This is Jinka Soderberg for KBOO News In Depth.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the PDX People's Climate March on Sunday, September 21st. Gathering will begin at 3 p.m. at the Park Bowl of Tomoko Waterfront, just south of the Hawthorne Bridge. World leaders are gathering in New York City for a UN summit on climate change, and across the country, people will be out in the streets to demand a better world for ourselves and for generations to come. Again, that's the People's Climate March on Sunday, September 21st at 3 p.m. at Tom McCall Waterfront Park in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6:05, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio. Coming up next is a special program called Working Family Radio Network, and that will be up in shortly. And then at 6:30 is Prison Pipeline, followed by Hard Knock Radio at 7. So please stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman and Mark Kritz in studio today.
Thanks, Brittany.
Hi, Brittany.
Alrighty. We've had some fun today, and to join our fun, on the line with us, we have Eric Shulman of Shulman & Associates. He's a lobbyist down in D.C., and we're going to talk about the government some. So welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. And just to clarify, I'm a labor lobbyist. I work for the American Federation of Government Employees, and I work with several other labor unions on a day-to-day basis.
I'm keeping busy, I'm very, very sure. All right. Now, you said offline we want to talk a little bit about some government spending and just some insight on the future of the government here and what they might have cooking.
Well, Congress is back for just another few days. They got in last week, and they're just about ready to adjourn and go home for the election recess. And the one thing that they absolutely have to do is pass a bill to fund all of the programs of the federal government. Used to be that this was accomplished through a series of individual appropriations bills, but Congress has shown itself to be unable to pass appropriations bills anymore, and so they pass what's called a continuing resolution, which is one bill to fund the entire government and essentially put it on autopilot. No increases in programs, no decreases in programs, simply funding all programs at their current levels, and that's what they're trying to decide upon now. They're talking about a CR that would go through mid-December, at which time they'd have to pass, again, either a continuing resolution or individual appropriations bills or an omnibus appropriations bill to fund several agencies. But money and appropriations is really the last item on the congressional agenda, at least on the domestic side.
You know, Eric, this is Mark, and I heard you say that you represent AFGE, I think something that the listeners need to know is that when the Republicans shut the government down, it was a host load of AFGE employees who went without paychecks, who were furloughed or given told that they couldn't work certain days or they could only work certain amounts of days. And I want people to realize what that does if you're a sole earner in your family or if your family depends on your paycheck. And the exercise that the Congress is going through right now, where you're talking about a continuing resolution or you're talking about an omnibus bill that has all the funding in it. Really, if you're one of these employees in the government, you're worried about, are they going to go through the same thing that they did years ago? I applaud your efforts and what you do, because it's a real struggle. You have a lot of folks in Congress right now that don't think that there's anything wrong with shutting the government down, although we've seen how much it actually costs taxpayers. But it's got to be a real challenge for the employees, and it's got to be a stroke against morale as well. How do you maintain that you want to do a great job, you want to do the best job you can, when the folks who are writing your or signing your paycheck or setting the budgets can't seem to get their act together?
Well, you know, just think about it. If, you know, you're working in the private sector and you go into the store where you work on a Friday expecting to pick up a paycheck and not getting it, how long are you going to continue going to that store and working for them? It's you put federal employees in an impossible position when Congress is unable to agree on a spending blueprint. And the federal employees are certainly at the front of the line in terms of feeling the pain of the inability of Congress to agree. And I agree with you. It's the Republicans that have consistently been the ones that are responsible for having closed down the government. They've been the ones to refuse to negotiate. And last year, when it happened, it was Mr. Boehner who finally yielded and agreed to a continuing resolution. I don't think we're going to be facing that same situation this year. The consensus seems to be among everybody that shutting down the government was a bad idea for all the reasons that you said and others. And so there will be a relatively easy process of agreeing to the continuing resolution, at least the one that they're working on now, which has as its primary purpose getting them through the election. If it's a mid-December date for the next one, who knows what's going to happen? Who knows whether there'll be an agreement or whether other factors will come into play and we find ourselves in the same situation as we did last year, where Congress was simply unable to fund the government.
No, and you highlighted it as well, is that it's a complete lack of living up to the duties of a member of Congress or a senator.
Right.
When you can't pass your own spending bills, when you can't come to some sort of an agreement. And really, the continuing resolution is a complete cop-out because it does just fund at the last year's levels, just continue funding at that same level because we can't make up our mind as to what we want. And what's unfortunate, and this is where many of the members of AFG or any organization that deals with the government has to worry that, well, if you can't come to an agreement on your spending bills, does that mean that a shutdown could be around the corner because you have enough members that just will not compromise on any issue? And again, I go back to you're in a tough situation representing these employees because the other side many times likes to make you out to be the bad guys, when in essence these are working people who aren't getting rich. They do a good job. They go to work every day. They try to do the best they can for the citizens of this country, and they're nameless. And it's easy to pick on people when they're nameless. When you start to see the impact like we had last year, it's a real problem.
And an eye-opening experience for a lot of people, particularly the Republicans, who end up getting burned every time they do this.
Yeah.
Because the American people speak. They get angry when their Social Security offices are closed or their post offices are closed or they can't get information on other programs of the government. And they let members of Congress know. And that's why we're going to avoid it, I think, in the short run. But the inability of Congress to agree on this, the most basic issue, is something to be concerned about in the future. I would not foreclose the possibility of another government shutdown. And for exactly the reasons you suggest, there are a number of members of Congress, Tea Party members and others, who believe that the government serves no useful purpose other than to defend the country. And any spending on any government program is considered a waste. And they believe that shutting down the government is not a bad thing. So it's always looming as a possibility, and we don't know what's going to happen after the election.
No, and it's frightening, having been there, to watch this inability to accomplish anything. And the citizens of this country will learn if they haven't already. And I think you're citing instances where they do learn the lesson that, you know, as we're all in this together and we have to continue moving that way. And looking at the session that's left, obviously it's going to be just the continuing resolution, and probably not much else will get accomplished before the election this year.
Right. And a CR is exactly what you say. It's putting the government on autopilot. It's basically saying we can't legislate. All we can do is just continue doing what we've been doing. No improvements, no changes, no revisions to programs that are good or bad. Just continue on autopilot. It's really a renunciation of the most basic obligation these members of Congress have, and a sad situation for all of us. And I don't know how much the Republicans have learned. I know they've learned a political lesson. I know for sure they understand that each time they get in front of a government shutdown, they pay a political price. And that's why Boehner is where he is right now on avoiding one. But who knows what the future will bring? I thought they learned this lesson in the 1990s when they shut down the government and everybody blamed the Republicans.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes what do they say? If you don't read history, you don't learn from it. And I think hopefully a lot of folks will learn the lesson. I think we're seeing it in gubernatorial and Senate races across the country that some folks are really stepping up and realizing that we have to do what's right for the citizens of this country. Well, I think we're closing up now. We're at our break time. Thanks a lot, Eric, for being on the air. You're listening to Eric Schulman on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
Hey, Union Edge listeners, this is Guillermo Perez, president of the Pittsburgh Labor Council for Latin American Advancement, encouraging you to join us on September 20th when we mark Hispanic Heritage Month with a celebration of Pittsburgh's most famous Latino, Roberto Clemente. The event will be held at the beautiful Clemente Museum and include guided tours, delicious Puerto Rican cuisine, and Chilean wine from Engine House 25 Wines. So don't miss it. No se lo pierdan. Saturday, September 20th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Clemente Museum in Pittsburgh. For ticket information, visit www.theunionedge.com.
7,000 high school students drop out every school day. If you stack their desks one atop the other, it's a pile more than 17,000 feet high. That's 12 Empire State Buildings. But what's truly scary is that another stack is going up tomorrow. We can keep students in school. Visit boostup.org and take the first step. Brought to you by the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad, how do you throw a curveball? How do you build a fort? How do refrigerators run? How do fish learn how to swim?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
How high can you jump?
But you don't have to know every answer.
How many phone numbers are there?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
How do cell phones work?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
What's electricity?
They just need you.
What's the moon made of?
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent, 1 in 260,000. The odds of him having 15 career NASCAR victories, 1 in 1.7 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism, 1 in 88. I'm Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is John Ondrasik of Five for Fighting, here for RAD, the entertainment industry's voice for road safety. You know, style is a personal thing, and your lifestyle is your business. But if you take it on the road, it becomes everybody's business. So please, plan ahead, designate before you celebrate. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Josh Groban. 1 in 6 Americans don't know where their next meal will come from. These are our neighbors, friends, and coworkers. There's just no sugarcoating it. These people need our help. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger to find out how you can make a difference. I'm Josh Groban, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. For more information about the show, go to theunionedge.com.
Welcome back to The Union Edge of Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets, and I'm in studio here with Mark Kritz.
Hi, Brittany.
We're having some fun. Coming up towards the end here in our last hour, on the line with us right now, we have our friend from Kentucky, the president of the Kentucky AFL-CIO, Bill Londrigan. Welcome back to the show. Bill, do we have you? Looks like we might have lost Bill.
No, I think you got me now.
Okay, we got you. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Good afternoon, and good afternoon to Mark as well.
Same to you, Bill. Thanks.
You're welcome, and I think Mark and I have been on the show previously a while back, right?
That's correct. I guest hosted for, you know, I feel like Jay Leno or one of those guys when they used to guest host for Johnny Carson, you know, sitting in the big chair now. But, yeah, as we talked, it's probably been a couple of months since I've been here.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
Yeah. Well, as long as you don't compare Brittany to Ed McMahon, we'll be okay.
There you go.
Well, how are things in Pennsylvania? Before I give you a little report about Kentucky and what we're doing down here, I know you guys got some big races up there as well, and maybe just a little bit of update on that for me would be really useful.
Well, what I can tell you is that every poll that comes out has our Democratic candidate for governor up by double digits. Even the Republican poll that came out still gave Tom Wolf an 11-point edge over the incumbent. And what makes that so incredible is that we went to a form of government 40-some years ago where a governor can run for a consecutive term, and the incumbent has never lost, and the incumbent rarely is even in a close race. And to have the Democratic nominee about to unseat the incumbent is incredible in itself, but the numbers are just beyond belief. I mean, we're seeing numbers in the high teens and into the high 20s polling with the Democrat ahead. And I think what you're seeing in Pennsylvania, we're hoping will reverberate across states like Michigan, Illinois, and Wisconsin in their governor races, but also reverberate down the Appalachian Mountains through West Virginia and Kentucky for the Senate races as well.
Well, we hope so, too, and we certainly is a very encouraging report to hear something that, with that kind of those kind of numbers. And it's interesting because you mentioned that the governor can succeed themselves, I guess, for, what, two terms, is that right?
Two four-year terms they're allowed to serve, yes.
Yeah, and in Kentucky, they changed the law here not long ago to allow that to happen, and it just so happened that the first Republican governor got elected in 36 years, and he ran after us with right to work, prevailing wage repeal, and all those nasty things, and he didn't make the second term. So hopefully there'll be some, you know, hope up there in Pennsylvania for the similar outcome, and I think that's a real strong message, and I do think that, you know, you're right about you know, people are thinking about their jobs and their livelihoods and their ability to put food on the table right now. And I think that's going to be benefiting the candidates that we support, Mark.
That's correct. That's, you know, and it is. And you're exactly right. People are starting to look at the candidates who are talking about the issues that mean the most to them. We've seen the other side, and we've seen big money in the media try to paint pictures and try to nationalize, get people to think about national issues. Well, when you start getting down to the senator for your state, your congressperson, your governor, this is someone who's supposed to be looking out for your interests. Your Kentucky senator should be looking out for Kentucky's interests, not getting into the national debate and playing that game. You know, from the numbers I've seen, it looks like you know, the folks in Kentucky are looking at that and saying, hey, you know, we need someone who is here for us, not for themselves or not to carry on big business and big money's debate.
Well, you couldn't, look at a worse example of that kind of operation, the way Mitch McConnell's been going about business here. As you know, in the last couple of weeks alone, you know, the filibustering of the student loan debt relief. What a real shame for, you know, students who are struggling to try and make the payments on their student loan debt. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had a gentleman on the show that was working at $7.25 an hour with no tips at a development for senior citizens and in the food service. And when we talked to him, we asked him, what kind of education you have. And he told us that he had a college degree. And I said, well, how much, do you have any debt? And he said, oh, yeah, $53,000. And, it just boggles the mind trying to figure out how a person making $7.25 an hour would be able to, pay off that amount in any reasonable period of time. And Mitch McConnell took probably, added years to folks' debt. And hopefully they don't forget that when election comes. And the younger folks, the students, understand that, there's a person in Washington that does nothing but, block legislation that is good for them and for workers and for the elderly and for children. It's unreal. And, the other day, another major piece of legislation came up and was also blocked one more time, Mark, and that was the to repeal and do away with the disastrous Citizens United opinion, right? And added to one of over 800 filibusters that McConnell has engaged in since he became the leader of the Republicans in the Senate.
You know, and you said something that really struck a nerve. The two things. One is, if you look back at 2012, I think I'm the poster child for why Citizens United is a bad decision, as I was the, well, we'll just say that the millions and millions of dollars came in against me, all from outside this state, in order to win an election. But, when you talk about minimum wage and you have a college-educated person who wants to work, is not avoiding working, but the only job that they can find, that they can get, happens to be a minimum wage job or something that's even close to that. A lot of us have that mindset that minimum wage is, you work at McDonald's, it's kids, it's high school kids or college kids, and they're just earning spending money. But you have people coming out with debt. You have working families that this is their income. And it's unfortunate when you have people like Mitch McConnell who block. And this is about leadership. Push for things that you believe in. Don't block what other people believe in. And then you come to some sort of agreement as to where the middle of the road is. Talking about debt, I know Brittany here in the studio can speak way more than I can, or probably you, Bill, about what college debt is like, because I know she's carrying a hefty load herself.
I was just going to chime in on that when the opportunity presented itself. I've been very closely following this bill for Senator Elizabeth Warren. And we've talked about it a little bit with some actually student organizations or generation-based organizations in D.C. And, I mean, we're really pulling. We hope that this will maybe come around this time because it could help a lot of people. And, I mean, it would only be fair. Why would you penalize the people who are students? There are students recently, college grads. A lot of people I know personally graduated in May. They don't have jobs yet. They're working restaurants, retail, stuff like that, trying to find even a part-time job within their career that they spent all of this money and all these years going to school for. And it's not as easy as it seems. I mean, some career fields have much easier hiring ways than others. But still, I mean, you graduate and like my loans are already coming up in November. And I'm like, where did the time go? It flew. I mean, I'm fortunate. I have a job and it's in my field and I'm very happy. But I know a lot of people who are not. And it's going to be rough because I'm even going already like, oh, my gosh, this is like more than I thought. Still realistically within the realm of what I thought it was going to be. I mean, I did like some loan counseling, stuff like that, like stuff through like loan services. It kind of gives you an idea to preview it. But like they don't show you that you don't understand that when you're signing these loans before you go to college. They don't really do a very good job of explaining it. And yeah, it's definitely a little rough. I couldn't imagine working at $7.25 an hour and then trying to pay off the student loans that I have. They're very high up there, and it's rough. And I'm really hoping this goes through because it's going to help a lot of people, and it's going to help the people who can least afford it refinance to something that might be a little bit more sustainable for them.
We hope so, and the only problem we have is Mitch McConnell. So, you know, that's why we're working yeah. so hard down here, Brittany, to try to get Alison Lundgren Grimes elected so that she would be extremely supportive of that legislation for sure. And, you know, it's so important. And, you know, folks don't realize the amount of money that's at stake for students, just like Brittany and others that are struggling to pay these bills. It's just, you know, they could have gotten a very good a break on these interest rates and you know, decrease the amount of payments they had to make over a long term. And really, it's just another, you know, real example of, you know, how callous and, you know, unsympathetic our senator and his caucus is up there in Washington to the, you know, interest of people that are working, trying to get a job or get an education like they'd be encouraged to do. So insensitive. And it's just another indication or another example of, you know, how McConnell goes up to Washington and votes against everything he says he's for down here in Kentucky. He says he's for veterans, he votes against veterans. He said he's for the elderly, he votes against elderly. You know, he says he's for students, he votes against students. You know, he acts like he's for workers and he votes against workers every time, you know, or blocks yeah. legislation.
And we're going to really have to talk about that as soon as we come back from break, because it's definitely a very pressing subject and we got to talk about it. So I'm Brittany Sheets, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Have you noticed that the powers that be employ an entirely different standard for measuring the health of America's job market than they use for the stock market? They're currently telling us that the job market is improving. What do they mean? Simply that the economy is generating an increase in the number of jobs available for workers. But when they say the stock market is improving, they don't mean that the number of stocks available to investors is on the rise. Instead, they're measuring the price, the value of the stocks. And isn't value